Aloha, this is Clint Hansen with Maui Real Estate Radio. You're joining us on the KAOI Radio Group, broadcasting at 7 a.m. on 11:10 a.m. on all of our follow-up stations as well. And you can find us, of course, wherever you find your podcasts, YouTube, and Facebook. Of course, I always have my co-host, Byron Yap. Please introduce yourself and say hello.
Good afternoon. Good morning, actually. Byron Yap here with American Savings Bank, and always look forward to these conversations. I learn a lot, and that's what I love about it.
And of course, Paul Brubaker. Say hello and introduce yourself.
Aloha, you guys. Good to see you again. It's Paul from the other island from Oahu.
Yeah.
Happy to join you.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And you can listen to this and all podcasts at MauiRealEstateRadio.com or search for real estate at MauiRealEstate.net. But the main thing we want to talk about today is not specifically drawing any specific conclusions associated with the tragedy that we've had in Lahaina. The fire has been, absolutely devastating. And it's really to just kind of see if there's any analogous or similar situations so that we can have just a glimpse or potential foresight into the future. The negative consequences of such a disaster are pretty far reaching, and but knowing how they will affect Maui, how long, is not something that you can draw specifically from this. It's just sort of to be a little bit of a guidance. So of course, Paul Brubaker has a long history of understanding Maui's history, and we want to use a couple examples in order to just kind of have a brief understanding of what's going on. So go ahead and get us started.
Well, I think right off the top, we have to recognize the extraordinary scope of the human tragedy in this instance, as distinguishing it from anything that has happened in Hawaii before. Well, since Pearl Harbor, and I mean, we could just stop there and just say that's enough, but the reality is, we all have lives to lead and businesses to operate or rebuild. A community has to be restored at some point. And one of the things that really makes it challenging to draw lessons from prior experiences is the nature of the catastrophe itself. Is it's like the Dresden firebombing, you know what I mean? The cleanup alone is going to take a long time, involves hazardous material evacuation, and that's only after the horrible business of identifying victims has concluded. So, unlike some catastrophes where you can sort of pick up and get going again quickly, this one is going to take a while to even get to that point. It is instructive to remember we went through a pandemic experience not that long ago where we shut down tourism for 6 months. We had a 14-day travel quarantine. So we know what that's like, and we know what it's like to rebuild after that. And we've had other experiences. So for example, the volcanic eruption on the Big Island, for those of you that are viewing this on screen, the difference there, of course, was that 700 homes were destroyed, but they weren't rebuilt, right? The lava inundated most of that. But there is a lesson to be drawn from that experience, which is something that economists call asymmetric information. We know more about, you guys on Maui know more about what's going on than people who aren't from Maui.
Absolutely.
And so the messaging is really challenging, particularly when there's an instinct, because of the shock of the event, to miscommunicate in a way that risks aggravating the underlying economic problem. We understand there's going to have to be a shutdown for a while, but saying "don't come to Maui" is a message that's hard to evolve later. It's hard to deploy a more nuanced message like South Maui is still open, West Maui not so much, when the first wave of social media and even professional media have made clear that the scope of the tragedy does require an interim hiatus of travel, perhaps. But we're going to have to get Maui going eventually. And another prior experience, which is now 30 years ago after Hurricane Iniki on Kauai, reminds us that the rebuild, whether it's in the case of tourism or in the case of Kauai, right, they rebuilt every house on the island. That can take time as well. The tourism recovery took many years, maybe 3, 4, 5, I would say. And if you're going back to pre-Iniki volumes, it took more like 15 to 20 years. But the rebuild itself, once we get to that point, then the community is going to have to make some hard decisions about how you replace, if that's what's going to happen, in an environment in which climate change and sea rise are constraints on what you do in the future. I mean, Front Street was a seawall. I'm not sure that can be replicated. That impulse of construction, once some of those decisions are made, will be material as well. But of course, it's going to be framed by the community's concerns and the nature of the regulatory environment that exists to guide it. So lots of tough decisions, just heartbreak at the front end, and you know, maybe some opportunity down the road, and an opportunity to rethink Lahaina itself, build the Lahaina of the next 200 years, since the one of the last 200 years tragically was wiped from the face of the earth.
Wouldn't it be, could it be possible during this rebuild that we figure, you know, the, I don't know if they can balance two balls, the government is diversify the economy. You know, Maui is so dependent on tourism. You know, is there an option that we can do both things at the same time, or do we focus all the build efforts? Because the concern is, you know, Maui has what, 70, 80% of the money is tourist related, or whatever number it is. It's a high number.
17%.
Yeah. Well, that's actually part of the problem. And you're citing a figure that the Maui Economic Development Board has used in informing the, you know, the public worldwide about the scope. So it turns out it was 40% before the pandemic. It was 30% the last 2 years. That's an extraordinarily large share of any economy. Don't misunderstand me, but it does mean, I mean, to like turn that on its head, it does mean that 70% of the economy in Maui needs to keep going. And if you shut down 30%, it's going to impair the other 70%. So the nerds can argue over the numbers. I'm here to tell you it was 40% pre-pandemic. It was 30% last year. And, you know, trying to work back to 40 maybe. But the economy is smaller since the pandemic. And tourism is smaller. But if half of it on Maui, 15 percentage points of the 30, just disappeared. As far as we can tell, West Maui is out of business for the duration. I mean, in any practical sense. That, to me, that suggests that we ought to be paying attention at some point to how we revive the other 15 percentage points that comprise the tourism share, so that the 70%, you know, what's the 70%? It's, you know, real estate, it's nail salons, right? It's all the other stuff that we all do.
Different restaurants,
and nail construction, salon, right?
Construction,
that aren't directly related or indirectly, right? The 30% is what we would call the direct and indirect, you know, nexus, the portion of the Maui economy that's hooked up indirectly.
Money gets handed down, you know.
And these are literally inter-industry relationships is the basis for that framework. Now, I can't speak to our MEDB guests, 70 or 80%, but
and replacement options, you know, is pretty far and few that we could actually have. Obviously, tech is one of those, but then that's not without its own issue, because there's gig workers that, might not necessarily live here, that aren't paying taxes. It takes a long educational time period before we can get. Hollywood has been something that they've been talking about for a long time, having a burgeoning film industry here. Obviously, again, that takes lots of money and time in order to diversify the economy to, but they do create living wages, and that is kind of numbers. To me,
There,
the
there's,
double-edged sword
there,
of
there's
tourism has,
nothing, there's nothing that's not on my list. So this is a multiple choice question, and the answer is all of the above. You see what I mean?
Yes,
And
all of
I
it.
think to just to advance your argument, I think the challenge is not to pick the winners per se, as much as to create the framework where people
Environment.
can, the environment in which people can thrive by doing something that is their passion, that they're good at, that they see a commercial opportunity to succeed in. And I think, unfortunately, in Hawaii and maybe Maui County more than the others, I don't know, it seems like we're hung up on preempting people from doing things. We're really good at gatekeeping and not so much good at creating the pathway or just letting people go. You know what I mean? I look at West Maui. I'm reminded of a thing David Cole used to say after he bought Maui Land and Pine. He had this saying about Kapalua: every seat in the house has a good view. I stand down there at the shoreline and on the Honoa Pilani Highway looking up, and I think, wait, the missionaries put Lahaina Luna School, the missionaries and the Ali'i put Lahaina Luna School where? At the top of the hill. Why can't we do that now? So this the re I don't even know if I can use the word rebuild, right? The transformation of what was the core commercial center for West Maui will take should take a form that capitalizes on the best of our imagination and leadership. And that's again a metaphor for what you were talking about, Clint, in terms of the structure of the economy. To me, the structure of the economy is endogenous. It happens organically, so to speak. What's exogenous are the people who come up with an idea and go, hey, chancellor. And of course, there's some coordination that has to happen. I think there's going to be an important leadership role for Maui County and so on.
I actually, one of the, of course, it's always comes down to the complicated political structure that we have here. And I'm
Absolutely.
not talking about the members. I actually really like a lot of the people that we have that are in our county. And, when I complain about, oh, did we pause?
No,
Oh,
you
here we go.
I
Okay.
think
You did.
I froze with my coffee mug up, and
Okay.
now my
So.
research
Just to get back
assistant,
to what I was saying,
my little dog was barking.
my complaints for the county that I've always had actually has nothing to do with the people, except maybe a member here or there. It really has to go down specifically to the process, and there's so many checks and balances, and there's so many subcommittees and individuals who have the ability to completely put something to a stop that while they're doing a good job, doing their job, or maybe they're significantly understaffed considering there's 700 open positions in the county. There just doesn't need to be that many checks and balances in place. I mean, when you have a plumber that's certified and coming up with engineering plans, you got two people working on a project, and then you have to have the county person on top of that, and then you have other people checking it. So the process is really kind of broken compared to most other places. In the United States for getting stuff done. And they've discussed a whole myriad of solutions. The problem is the length and time that comes to systematic or changing the system is longer than entire political term. So you would spend the entire time figuring out and coming up with a new system, and then it comes into a new political scene, and then you have to hope that the same people get reelected and agree on the same, change in order to make those substantive changes. So it is very strange the way our system works, and I don't know how we're going to rise above it, but we really do, because the county is now like, has a fire under them to, you know, work on projects that are on the edge of being approved in order to get them through, you know, the final hurdles. And even they're pulling their own hair out because they're like, oh my gosh, like, why can't we do this? And it's because of the way the system's been built, not necessarily the people that are there.
Well, it takes longer to get permission to build something than it does to actually build it. But yeah. I think the underlying point you're making, and I agree, it is a democracy. People in leadership in at the county council and in the administration are elected, and they're trying to do their best job. You know, it's about the balance between guardrails and bandwidth, and we seem to have swung over to the guardrail, you know, part of the mix, and we don't have enough bandwidth. One way to not have to rely so heavily on guardrails is for the path for the bandwidth to be wide and transparent, right? And maybe a little more faith that people are going to, right? Maybe emphasize enforcement rather than gatekeeping we talked about earlier.
Yeah, exactly.
With credible threats of enforcement, not fake, you know, enforcement. But this, because of the extraordinary nature of this event, the fact that everything before the wildfire was already all jam up just makes the imperative even greater to figure out a better way to make things happen. They're going to happen in West Maui, but everything else on the island has to happen as well.
To get back to other examples, you know, obviously the rebuilding process is going to be a long fraught, no matter what, even if it goes smoothly, which it will not. How did Kauai go about when it comes to that? Obviously, there's a time period. They have their own issues associated, and they had significant damage to overcome.
Well, before I answer that question, and I will, I think it's important to go back to where we started to understand how messaging and postures taken in the initial aftermath of the fire now constrain how we move forward. So, for example, the governor, I respect his impulse, but his throwdown was no investors. And I'm kind of like, wait, if somebody has just had their property burned to the ground and is inclined not to go back there and to start life anew somewhere else, you're saying that they cannot sell their property? You're saying that the attorney general is supposed to look for people who get unsolicited inquiries about this? Wow, I need to step back and think about the process that happens when you interdict the flow of capital and constrain people's private property rights. But yeah, Let's just leave that to the side for a second. Here's the way this was done on Kauai. Different situation, okay? On Kauai, within, what are we, 3 weeks since the fire? At this point, after Hurricane Iniki on September 11th, 1992, not only had I been to Kauai once on behalf of the Chamber of Commerce and went back, just in terms of business community, you know, let's all put our heads together and think about stuff. The county, with FEMA, had established what was called the Office of Emergency Permitting. So going back to the bandwidth analogy, the Kauai County had two tracks. One track was for the traditional building permit and development or construction approval process, the same track that had been there prior to the hurricane. And then a new, like, speedway, freeway, high-speed rail system was created if you were going to rebuild your destroyed structure, commercial or residential structure. The OEP, the Office of Emergency Permitting, was up and running within a month. I have the data. In fact, I have it in these slides. I just showed it to you. These are the OEP data, the light blue bars, which you can see the data start in October 1992, the month after the hurricane, And they peak in January or first quarter. Here's January, February, March, first quarter of 1993. Now that's light speed compared to what is going to be feasible in Lahaina because of the nature, the character of the destruction. But at the moment, we can reasonably think about a green light. Something like that is not an unreasonable place to start thinking about process. And what I'm saying is, it's been done before. The construction impulse on Kauai peaked within 1 or 2 quarters and then had a long tail over 2 or 3 years. And everybody got the infrastructure investment. So just to take on infrastructure for a second, I would be saying right off the top, you know what? Let's finish the Lahaina bypass,
Yeah, no
period.
doubt.
Boom. I'm the governor. We're going to finish. I'm Ed Sniffen, the head of the Department of Transportation. We're going to finish the Lahaina bypass now. And
The
I'm
West
just.
Maui Greenway, that has been driving me crazy because it's something that has been planned and known, and it's an alternate form of transportation. There's multiple laws and stipulations requiring alternate forms of
Everybody's building
transportation put in
around
place.
it, building with it in mind.
They actually have money in place to spend and significantly more funds that are necessary that are about to hit sunset, and those funds are gone forever. And this has happened year after year after year where it just gets out of reach. And
But that
it drives me so crazy that we can't get our county to agree to something that is right there in our grasp to benefit our kids, our children, our transportation, and be more green.
Well, more importantly, if we learn anything, it's that we need redundant bandwidth in the case of a crisis. And the Honopilani Highway is falling into the ocean already at Launiupoco and Oluwalu's and, all along there. So this would be the moment for leadership to just step up and say, here's the infrastructure throwdown. We start here. We put in the water infrastructure. We put in the sewage infrastructure. We're going to do the whole corridor, Mauka, because we know what's happening on the shoreline to begin with. And we've just suffered this catastrophic loss of life because we've been inattentive to these issues in the past. I mean, 3 weeks into it, and everybody's still pointing fingers. I mean, there's nothing but finger pointing going on right now, as far as I can tell. And nobody's stepping up into leadership to like give us one good idea to help get the wheels rolling, to help get people thinking about what they can do next. I mean, besides providing relief.
So we have about 6 minutes left. Is there any other historical examples that we could kind of come to for a recovery period? I mean, I think obviously, of course, the nature is so dramatically different here that it's hard to draw a conclusion for a number of reasons. But that being said, what I'm hearing is it will cost over $1 billion and, 2 years, 1 to 2 years for cleanup. So again, it's going to be hard, but the thing is, it's isolated compared to the rest of the island. So I think there is some analogy for an economic recovery because it's not all of Hawaii. It is a small portion of our historical town that's been damaged. Well, the
Look,
entire
we
historical
live
town.
in a $100 billion economy, which means in 2 years, $200 billion will have been generated. We're not talking about paying $1 billion in cash. We can go issue bonds with 10, year municipal bond maturities or longer, or we can structure it so that they get to the end of 2 years and we roll that into. So you can go to the credit markets with Hawaii's AAA credit rating and get cheap money. The $1 billion, dude, these freaking guys 3 months ago were saying they had a $2 billion surplus. And then all of a sudden on July 1st, the governor said, oh, sorry, it was only 1 billion. So a billion is not even a footnote. It's like the math error for these guys. So don't tell me about how much this costs. We can do it.
Absolutely.
Number two, the private investor will do it with their on their own dime, right? The billion is just the starting point. The private capital that's going to be unleashed here is the part that's going to make things better than they were before. The challenge is that there's this massive chasm in jobs, incomes, business. People are going to lose their jobs because there's not enough business. People are going to get their homes foreclosed on because they couldn't make their mortgage payments because they lost their job. The longer the wait is to get something going. And you can put a foreclosure moratorium, but that just means that American Savings is going to be sitting on a bunch of mortgages, right? That aren't being paid. So you're just pushing problems down the road unless you bring that road down that we can see out in the future, closer to the present, and get something going. We learned that in the pandemic. Dude, that was 3 years ago and we've already forgotten it. People talk about, oh, this is shut down tourism. I'm like, no, bro, we did that in 2020. Remember all the people that lost their jobs and had no incomes? So I'm kind of astounded. Yeah, look, it's as you alluded to this earlier. Yes, it's about chewing gum and walking at the same time. Get on with it.
Yeah, and hopefully the big question is how much are we going to be able to get Lahaina's people inputting on the recovery process? Because that's to them, the most important factor. They want to have a hand in being able to shape Lahaina for the future. And, that's why the idea of pulling away, people who have lost everything, do they have the money to rebuild their own home? So you're going to force them to hold on to land that they can't rebuild on. Like, there's a lot, it's a very complicated issue, and I understand the heart behind it, and I don't want anything to change, but it also affects people that many of those homes are second homes. They don't live there, and maybe this is an opportunity to get locals into those properties. There's two sides to every coin, and multiple
Every
perspectives can be
property
considered.
owner ought to have the ability to make their own decision on their own terms for their own reasons without anybody else judging them or telling them what they ought to do. So,
There just simply
right
needs to
off
be
the top.
tools in place to help people who own their land to rebuild. They need to be able to have a means to go to the permit office, get permits for their house, an area they can pull funding from so that they can rebuild their house. It's not complicated, it's straightforward. The biggest
No.
issue that I see is there's going to need to be at what I would call a Lahaina District disaster variance code for a period of time, because Lahaina in its current form could never exist with the way setbacks are. It's more than high enough. I mean, it's like 10 feet above the high water mark. So to me, it's not a question of coastal erosion in that particular area, but Lahaina just simply couldn't exist because how many, feet for commercial versus residential? It just, those homes, those businesses just simply can't exist. So they need to have it understanding the emergency that we're in and create code in order to deal with this emergency, or completely rebuild and just tell people, no, this is the way it's going to be, and screw their lives over. So I don't think they're going to want to commit that kind of political suicide, and they need to get with making these variances.
I agree that it's way more complicated than, we can handle in
Yeah.
this conversation. And
Yeah.
I also think it's really, really important for the people in the community
Be
to be
heard.
the
Yeah.
primary voices in all of
100%.
this.
Yeah. And I just want to add one thing to the viewers, to listeners, that all we are is we're exploring conversations right now. We're not saying do this, do that, the earth is going to fall apart or whatever. We're having these conversations so people can listen to everything and make decisions as a community with their government, without their government or whatever. So we're not taking positions, meaning I'm not saying do this or do that. And I just want everybody to understand that we're just having a conversation and let you be the judge how you want to move forward.
Very well said, 100%. So, yeah,
We're here, Byron.
In conclusion, closing comments that you'd like to make on this?
Well, I'll just quickly, because I am the econo nerd here, a little bit a reminder that in the backdrop, right now we have higher interest rates, but those are likely to be coming down over the next 18 months to 2 years. And it doesn't seem as if a recession is as likely as people seem to think it was. I never thought it was all that probable, but it's much less probable now as we look out across the remainder of this year into 2024. And we're going to be at mid-decade in a couple of years. So the runway is clear for sustained economic growth. We have a very tight labor market on Maui. It's going to get worse because, people are going to leave, not just people who were affected directly, but people whose livelihoods now are impaired by the loss of tourism that is manifesting itself in cancellations and whatnot. So a bit little struggle as we move through the remainder of this year. But as I say, a lot of runway for takeoff and a macro economic environment. The inflation rate in Hawaii is back to 2%. Interest rates are high, but they're going to go about halfway back to where they were 2 years ago, which is probably the right place for them to be. And then, given a proper mix of guardrail and bandwidth, opportunity to do something new and maybe different in Maui that everybody will have a serious chance to rethink over the next 6 months or a year.
Excellent. Thank you, Paul. I really appreciate you joining us today. And Byron Yap, thank you so much. Is there anything you'd
Thank
like to say
you.
in conclusion? I think you said
Thank
it
you. Yep, I think
perfect.
that's the way it is. Like I said, I want to repeat it one last time, is we're just having conversations we want to share with the community, and we want community input. And the decision is the community's.
100%. I'm Clint Hansen with, and this is Maui Real Estate Radio. You can listen to this and all shows at mauirealestateradio.com. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank
Aloha.
you.